Annie Meringue.
Dusty Bun?
Dusty Hera.
I've been really busy. I'm trying to save the world from Russians and monsters.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader.
Of course you have.
1080.
I want to hear it.
The Fan.
The stars. Hour number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this Wednesday afternoon. Raining down here in Eugene where I am.
It was raining here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's craptastic here. I went hoodie and pants.
Yeah, so did I. Mm. So did I.
Yeah, I'm wearing pants today, too.
Look at all of us being big boys with our pants.
I know, right?
Hoodie was a bad choice. Hoodie was a bad choice
yeah,
for
you,
me.
You were out in the actual elements. You needed a little weather resistance.
Yeah, the Ducks were outside for their practice today, so I was exposed to the elements. I found a little cranny, a little nook that I ducked under and watched most of it. This is on me. I'm an Oregonian. I got a little cocky sniff when I looked at the weather report, and the weather report said, it'll be light rain. It was not. I forgot what light rain is in Oregon. I forgot what that was.
Mm.
Hand up on me, got dumped on.
The light drizzle?
Yeah, it was not a light drizzle. The light drizzle, I forgot how aggressive a light drizzle can be. Mm. So I'm down here in Eugene, as I am every Wednesday throughout the college football season. And Danny holding it down in Rust back at the fort at the 1080 The Fan studios. So thank you for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours. We've got a lot that we need to get to. The great Jerry Allen said he is going to sneak into this studio at some point and sit down. We can have story time with Uncle Jerry because what a great week to have him on at some point when we've got Oregon State. The man has been on the call for, I think, 37 Civil Wars far.
That sounds like a fair amount. We have to get his take on the Platy.
Oh, on the trophy itself.
Oh yeah, on the trophy itself.
Yeah, I like this. I think that I like this. We'll talk to Jerry about that and this rivalry, what it means to the Oregon Ducks, and what to look at coming up this weekend as the Ducks take on the Beavers. Tyreek Hill said yesterday that he believes the officer who arrested him on Sunday prior to the game should be fired. He has elaborated on that a little bit today, and he's not backing down, but he is clarifying a little bit.
Your lawyer has come out and said that he's looking for the dismissal of the officer. What does that mean?
Gone.
So you want the officer to be
gone. 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 He got to go, man. Because in that instant right there, like, not only did he treat me bad, you know what I'm saying? He also treated my teammates with, you know, disrespect. You know, he had some crazy words towards them, and they ain't even do nothing. Like, what did they do to you? They just walking on the sidewalk. So, I don't know, bro. Like, he got to go, man. Like, it's not too many times that cheaters say people got to go, but you out. What they say on Wild or Not? Gone. Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. No comprende.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
You knew I was going to say something crazy.
Here I ended that. You know I was going to say something crazy. Tyreek Hill calling for the officer's firing. And I think that one thing that we can all agree on in what happened when the release of the body cam footage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he did say at another time that he could have handled the traffic stop better.
Yes.
Which I think we can agree on. But the officer, in terms of his role and his job to de-escalate a situation,
100%.
Amplified the situation and made it exponentially worse throughout the entirety of that body cam footage. At no point did I sit there and think he's trying to de-escalate this situation. Was Tyreek Hill in the wrong? He did not react well in that moment.
Telling the cop to just go write me the ticket and do what you got to do and then rolling up your window, probably a great idea.
No, but at the same time, like, police officers are trained to handle people who are disgruntled and upset mm-hmm. because nobody likes to get pulled over. No. Nobody likes to get a ticket. These aren't going to be like, hey, officer, so happy to see you today, you know? And so Tyreek Hill handling it the way he did, I'm glad he showed awareness and say, I could have been better in the way he handled it. But at the same time, the officer needed to de-escalate, and he didn't do that.
No.
Whether it was with Tyreek or Calais Campbell or Jalen Phillips, all of those guys that showed up and stopped to try and smooth things over, which that's another thing, but I thought Calais Campbell handled it really well. He was backing away the entire time. He was just trying to do something that the officer wasn't doing, which was make sure that it did not turn into a situation that it did.
Yeah, and Tyreek Hill's transgressions are very, very minor here. He was a D-head. Like, that's not a crime.
Yeah.
The officer involved instigated and escalated at every single point during the video. And it's incontrovertible proof in that body cam that the guy was just a reckless bleepity bleep. And it's not very often that I'm going to go down that path of like, they need to be gone. This guy needs to be gone. He absolutely unequivocally needs to be gone. That the way I would have a mild sense of grace for somebody who was newer to the job. He's been on the force for 27 years.
Mm-hmm.
You should be far and above better than that in that instance. I don't care what's going on with your life.
And like, especially in the situation where the ticket said a visual estimation of 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, but wasn't it in like a 25 or something like that?
45.
Okay.
Yeah.
45. So going 20 over in a Lambo.
Yeah.
It's going to catch some eyes.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure he was like, oh, this guy thinks he's something. And he was trying to prove something going in, which is, again, a problem.
Yeah.
I will 100% stand by that. That cop needs to be gone. And the sad part of the whole thing is
that we're agreeing with Tyreek Hill on something.
Again, this is not just the Vanderford text line says, hey, we don't need to like make Tyreek Hill a sympathetic figure. No, we don't, because he's got transgressions in his past that make him a terrible human being.
I do not like Tyreek Hill.
No, and you shouldn't.
I don't.
And that's the thing. But everything about this cop like just tells me he should be gone, because it wasn't the most egregious abuse of power I've ever seen, which is unfortunate that we've seen so much worse. But this is clearly somebody that cannot and should not be in that position of power. What was disappointing to me is that none of the other officers stepped in and called. Well, one of them tried to, but then he ended up backing down because the other guy just got louder. Which,
just a weird situation all the way around.
Yeah, and it was. You can hear the cop and the other calmer cop in the beginning. They go, "That's Tyreek Hill, man."
Yeah,
like
and the cop who or the officer who was overstepping everything. You heard him go, "Oh, F."
Yeah, because he knew, like, oh God, this is gonna be a whole thing.
Yep, and it is.
And it is now. I don't know if you saw the report alongside the video that came out. The officer's legal counsel had reached out to Tyreek Hill to apologize. Tyreek Hill and his legal team declined that apology.
Oh.
So he knows he's screwed already.
Yeah.
Because when you're a cop and something happens, they tell you to shut up, and then the union, you know, puts up all walls around you until it turns out, you know, you're Derek Chauvin and you had a knee on somebody's neck and you killed a man, and then they go, ah, he's not one of us. You know, that's what the union's kind of there for, is to be that blue shield, and they're already kind of getting out in front of it, like, yeah, once that body cam video came out, he was screwed. So the apology tour has already started behind the scenes, and in all reality, this guy needs to go. He's going to end up getting his pension anyways, because he's been there for 27 years. But
this will be interesting to see how the rest of this plays out.
Yeah, because they're suing him.
But like I said yesterday, and I believe it, this is like the epitome of two wrongs don't make a right on either side. Tyreek Hill did not, he won traffic violation, right? Two, he didn't handle it the right way. Then the officer came over the top and he didn't handle it the right way. We can all agree nobody was in the right here, and we shouldn't be painting, you know, Tyreek Hill as some sort of choir boy who can do no wrong
no.
or was not at fault at all in anything that happened here. But at the same time, the officer was way worse than anything that Tyreek Hill did. And that, I think, it needs to be conveyed. And it needs to... This is why people are talking about it, is because it was a situation that you had two people who did not handle a situation the correct way. One handled it far worse than the other, though. And in this case, that was the officer, by escalating it to a point that it didn't need to be at whatsoever. All right. Okay. Twitter is a dark place. It is where we get a lot of our worst day on the web, which is coming up at 1:30. Mm. But dare I say, Twitter got something incredibly right and incredibly wrong at the same time. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. Twitter gets a lot wrong. Twitter gets some things right. Yeah. This comes to us via our buddy Jimmy Shapiro. And he sent along this. BetOnline.ag Twitter, I guess, polling of with Jim Harbaugh and Nick Saban out of college football. They dove into the data of who is being discussed as the best football coach in all of college football. Who do you think number one is as the best coach in college football, according to Twitter?
Kirby Smart?
Yep.
Yeah.
See, they're getting it right there.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not even close. Like, it was Kirby Smart by a mile in this thing. And that is the correct answer. Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, he got the second most votes. Dabo Swinney at Clemson got the third most. He has won a national title. Lane Kiffin coming in at fourth at Ole Miss. Lincoln Riley, fifth. From USC. Dan Lanning coming in sixth, right behind Lincoln Riley there. But where I think that this poll is completely wrong and completely off base is, where do you think Kyle Whittingham ranked on this list of the best coaches in college football?
I would hope in the top 10, but I would imagine because he's at Utah, it's in like the 50th.
No, he came in 19th. The 19th best coach in college football, Kyle Whittingham.
Think of 17 better coaches than
See, this is where Twitter can get something right, but also get it completely wrong at the same time. He is behind PJ Fleck at Minnesota.
God, no.
Sonny Dykes of TCU.
I think Sonny's on the same level as Whittingham.
Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri. Mike Norvell at Florida State.
No.
Ryan Day at Ohio State.
No.
Brent Venables at Oklahoma.
God, no.
Mark Stoops of Kentucky.
No.
Luke Fickle at Wisconsin.
No.
Brian Kelly at LSU. Josh Heupel at Tennessee.
No.
Mike Gundy, Oklahoma State.
I don't like Kelly, but he is a good coach.
I mean, for my money... If you're talking about who the best coach in college football is, Kirby Smart is number one.
Yes. Whittingham's top five.
I would put Kyle Whittingham right behind Dabo Swinney at third.
Yeah.
Because Dabo has won titles. You can't take that away from him.
As much as you don't like him or whatever, or the other. Like, he won, not a title, titles.
But then it's Kyle Whittingham.
Yeah.
The juice that he squeezes out of that roster every single year is incredible. They may stub their toe somewhere along the way, but
even if they do, they're like the Knights of St. Need. They gum you to death. Like they find a way, no matter what, to be a complete pain in the ass.
With a roster that is not nearly as talented from recruiting metrics or any of that to some of the teams that they play, they are always in the conversation at the end of the day. I think Kyle Whittingham and the respect that he gets is absolutely asinine. And if you think he was close in this voting, he was closer to Jeff Brohm of Louisville than he was PJ Fleck at Minnesota. Kyle Whittingham.
Again, I think that's more just like think about every program you named. they're all either in the SEC, the Big Ten, or they're more viable names from like high profile programs.
Yeah, and a likable guy too, a great person,
and great Cavs.
Phenomenal Cavs. I would still take him over a lot of coaches in a battle royale. If you were going to fight coaches,
oh God,
I'm still
yes.
taking Whittingham over most of the coaches that are out there.
Look, when they do the old pictures during practice in the summer, the coaches are wearing the shorts. Whittingham, he could still get under a squat rack.
You're dang right.
That man is still very, very jacked. But I mean, as a coach, you know. Well, the way Clark Phillips III talked about him, the reverence
yeah.
that he had for him when we talked to him, was it 2 years ago? It really reinforced that Cam Rising was the same way. Every person that I've ever talked to about Whittingham has been the same in the sense of like the importance of not just who he is as a coach, but as a human being, and how that feeds into who he is as a coach, and how successful he has been at a program like Utah. It really does speak to it. And he's never wanted to leave. Like
no.
that's where he wants to be. And I think that allows him to be, because it's not that he doesn't have goals to go somewhere else, because I think his goal was to be the head coach at Utah. And because of that, I think he can be 100% authentic.
Yeah.
And I think that part of him and that being so intrinsic to who he is allows him to be the best version of himself. And I think so rarely do you get coaches that they say they want to be somewhere and they may be 80% honest in that, yeah, they do want to be there. But there's so few coaches where who they are, where they are, and where they want to be all align at the same time to allow them to be so successful.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely does. And he's 164-79.
That's an obscene winning percentage for a coach.
Yeah. It absolutely is. And you think of everything that they went through over the last 3 years, injury-wise, with Cam Rising. Think about that. And he went 10-4, 10-4, 8-5. Great coach. Phenomenal coach. I mean, he's one of the best.
He's winning 2/3 of his games, Dusty, at Utah.
Yeah.
Over what, 20 years?
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think his first year was official. His first full year was 2005, so 19 years.
God.
Yeah. Because he took, and look, even his start of his tenure at Utah was incredible because he took over for Urban Meyer when Urban got the Florida job.
Yes.
And he coached Utah in the Fiesta Bowl, an interim coach going from a small school going to a New Year's Six Bowl and winning it. Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
Keeping it
pretty
going.
Good.
That's got to be one of the hardest things to do in college football.
Yep. Yep, built it up and ran off and has never looked back. And especially
Utah's never fallen off. They've never fallen off. And
they had this couple of years, right, when they were making that transition into the Pac-12 where they were down a little bit. But they were just building up to a roster, to a Power 5 to be competitive. And look, that is the most impressive part about Utah. It wasn't like they jumped up from the Mountain West to the Pac-12. And had a couple of years and then disappeared. No, they came up to the Pac-12. It took them a while for their roster to get to the point of being competitive year in and year out. But then it's been 10 wins, 10 wins, 10 wins, 9, 7, 9, 9, 10, 10, 10, 11. He's been absolutely incredible. So even when Twitter gets it right, they find a way to get it wrong. We're going to have to call a hot route on worst day on the web.
Oh.
Yeah. Jerry Allen has entered the chat.
Oh, perfect.
He is in the booth. So, voice of the Ducks, Jerry Allen. We're going to have story time with Uncle Jerry.
Perfect.
Up. And then we can do worst day on the web. Maybe we hot route worst day on the web to 2:30.
There we go.
How about we do that?
Let's do that.
We'll do that. Jerry Allen, voice of the Ducks, joins us next. First is Russ, Sports Center. We're going to start calling this story time with Uncle Jerry.
Here we go.
I appreciate you didn't say Grandpa Jerry. Thank you very much.
All right. Story time with Grandpa Jerry. No, Uncle Jerry here as we're down in Autzen Stadium. We're overlooking. Every Wednesday I'm down here in Eugene. Danny's still back up in the studios. But it's always good to bring you in. And this week is a special one because it's a rivalry week. Oregon State. And you're going to be on the call for, we were trying to do the math here, the 38th
Just doesn't seem real. That's crazy. That's a lot of players, a lot of fans.
And you've seen some incredible games that have come through,
too. My gosh. Yeah, to try to remember them and put them all. I mean, one of the most famous for me will be, two. When Oregon beat Oregon State in Corvallis, Dino Filios, green pass, Ducks win, get to go to the Rose Bowl for the first time since Noah landed the Ark. Or it seemed like that. It was a long time. and then we, Chip Kelly's in, and go to Corvallis again, need to beat the Beavers to go to their first ever national championship game. And they did, and those two moments probably are the biggest up there that I can remember.
Outside of Kenny Wynn's going to score, the emotion that we heard from the Oregon Ducks are going to play for the national title is your two most legendary calls that you've ever had.
Yeah, I was telling Tyson Alger earlier today, we were talking about that, and you know, as a broadcaster, when you do something, I don't, and I don't think you do either, you don't try to plan what you're going to say in a big moment. It's just got to be real and natural. So I knew that Oregon had a chance to go to a national championship game if they beat Oregon State. I don't know what I'm going to say. It's going to be great, exciting. If it's a close game, I don't know how it's going to be. And then all of a sudden it was there, and it came out, and I just lost it.
Yeah.
I just lost it. And I was so disappointed because it wasn't very professional. I'm thinking, you know, do a good call, count it down, Ducks are going to national, whatever, way it should be. And it didn't come out that way because I just couldn't. I just lost it. So we're driving back from Corvallis to Eugene, and I'm still just beating myself up because it was so unprofessional. And the play came on. I think you guys played it from the Portland studio, and that people were calling in and talking about it. And I heard it for the first time.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, okay, that wasn't too bad. And like, all the guys in the car were like, are you kidding me? That was a great call.
It was a great call.
I accept that now. But at the time, I just felt like I'd lost control. Like with Kenny Wheaton, I would just, I'm screaming, you know?
But I think that also is like you always want to be professional. But at the same time,
where's the fun in that?
Emotion of the game is you're feeling exactly what the people that are listening and watching are feeling as well.
That's what I tried to do. I used to teach broadcasting when I was down in Southern Oregon to kids, and I would say, here you are. You have taken your best friend to a football game, and your best friend is blind.
Yeah.
So you're going to use the simplest terms you can. He's going to hear the noise. And you're going to tell him where the ball is, who's got it, and where it's going. This is simply as you can. So I've always thought that's what I wanted to do. I never wanted to get too overly technical about, you know, gaps and all kinds of different defenses and offenses. So I never did. I let Jorgie do that.
Yeah.
I let you do that down on the field. But I just try to be really basic about it. And you kind of realize it when I was doing high school ball, and even at this level, the majority of fans don't understand the game.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, my silly wife, who was a cheerleader for years, asked me one day, why do they have to punt the ball away? Why do they have to give it away?
Yeah.
I said, you mean serious? She said, why? I said, no, you're right. Well, I'll explain it one day. But most people listening, they get the basics, but they don't get the you know, little bubble screen and stuff like that.
That's okay. My wife and I had this conversation the other day. She didn't know what a receiver was, and I was like, I literally coach receivers, and that's what I played receiver. She's like, I don't care.
That's the average fan. They just enjoy the game.
I will say, though, the emotion and being a part of it for so long, and it doesn't matter whether you're someone who's calling high school football or you're calling, you know, the Miracle on Ice, the emotion, I think it matters. And having your attachment that you have, I think that matters. I mean, like, you can talk about, you know, the great, you know, national play-by-play folks like Al Michaels screaming, do you believe in miracles? I mean, I think like having that attachment to things, that's what brings it home. So Lean into that. Come on now.
Yeah, no, you're right. And you could hear, and so this Saturday I'm going to get even more emotional.
Good.
You know, on a third down, if they fail on a third down, I may cry. I don't know. but Al Michaels is a great example.
I would love to see Jorgie's face if that happened.
Jorgie, what are you doing?
I didn't get it. Al Michaels is a great example. I mean, he was just calling it for the national audience, mm-hmm. but he was a part of that team. His emotion was genuine. You can listen to a football, baseball game, whatever it is, and you can tell when a guy's paid. They flew in yesterday. They talked to a few people. They're doing the game. They're going to fly out tomorrow. You can tell that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make the game as fun or as exciting as when there's some real genuine emotion in it.
Look, Paul Allen is the radio voice for the Minnesota Vikings, and he's drove me crazy over the years, but you will never, ever, ever question his passion and love for that team.
Yeah.
No, that's good. It's a fine line to walk, because when Bill Byrne hired me, he said, and I'll never forget this, he said, you need to show your excitement for the Ducks, all right? And don't worry about somebody calling you a homer. I'm the one that signed your check. So, but after that, I realized that, you need to be respectful of other teams and players and fans. So,
All right, we had two memorable ones that you have. Dino Filia in the end zone, Ducks go to the Rose Bowl, Ducks go to the national title. I need to ask you, how do you call a fog bowl?
You don't.
That is one of the things that we're all watching it on TV, and sometimes cameras can cut through the mm-hmm. fog. They went to low angles in the fog bowl.
Yeah.
But you don't have that luxury on radio. What did you do for those? Then you've had two of them.
We went to the sideline.
Oh, really?
Really?
So if we have a fog game, you're calling it.
All right.
So you may have to get out of the field a little bit.
Here we go. Let's get dirty.
We just couldn't see. We just couldn't see. It's like, and I think Oregon had the plating on their shoulder pads at the time, and they shined a little bit more through the fog, and so you could see these little spots bouncing around down on the field. But you didn't know where the ball was. No, it was crazy.
Did you just throw your hands up and just say, I wish I could tell you?
Jorgie, can you say, no, I can't see. Who was doing the sideline. Might have been Mike Barrett. Could have been Jay Allen. I'm not sure one of those guys was doing the sideline. We said, okay, can you see enough? We're down here because they're not looking down through the fog.
Yeah.
And so they did it until it dissipated enough for us to pick it back up.
Holy smokes. Now we have a Oregon State game that isn't going to be played with fog because it's in September.
No turkey.
So are you still going to have turkey? Are you on tomorrow night? Are you
just to keep it normal?
Get into routine for this game? Are you going to have turkey?
I didn't think about that.
About food?
No. Well, yeah. we'll line up pizza, chicken, and turkey and have some pumpkin pie just in case. But I don't care if you played this game the weekend before Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving, June 1st, or February 9th. It's a rivalry game, and it's the game that means everything. It's different.
Yeah.
It won't be raining, I don't think.
I don't think it will be. I think it was going to be sunny and 72.
It's my first time in maybe 36 years that I've been to Corvallis that it hasn't rained with the wind blowing sideways.
Wow.
That's normally what is that time of the year.
Yeah, and now we're just going to have to reframe kind of all of our thinkings of how this game is going to be played, because early in the year, both teams working through stuff still. And at the end of the season, it is, you have the light at the end of the tunnel, whether it's a conference championship game or, bowl aspirations for either team. Now it is a complete reframing of where teams are, where they're progressing towards, and really who you are. You're still finding your identities.
You know, and that's probably more for the fans than it is for the teams, because I think the teams are so focused on week to week. Okay. Who's the opponent this week? Oregon State? Okay, let's prepare for Oregon State. Let's fix what we didn't do right last week and get ready for this game. Fans have time to stew on everything that's happened. We're not in the Pac-12 anymore. Oregon passed us. They didn't take us with them. I think there's a lot of blame, given to Oregon. It's too bad. But that's what's going to be going on in the stadium. Yeah. The game is completely separate to everything and the reason we're playing the game this early.
All right, let's talk about this game coming up this weekend. Saturday, 12:30, you can hear it right here on The Fan. Uncle Jerry's going to be on the call with Mike Jorgensen here, and let's dive into the Ducks and the Beavs coming up this Saturday. This is Danny and Dusty on the Fan. Voice of the Ducks, Jerry Allen, sticking around with us, hanging out with us. He hasn't kicked me out of his booth yet, and he hasn't just left yet, so we're gonna hold on to you.
I haven't seen the check yet either. Give me a check.
I can't afford that. I can't afford that.
I'm cheap. Yes, you can. Food. That's all I need. Food. Hot dog. Okay.
We've got Oregon State coming up this weekend. Ducks, first 2 weeks, they've been working through some things. All of the excitement, all the expectations. It's been a work in progress, though, especially on the offensive side of the football. I thought the defense has been really good through the first 2 weeks, though.
Yeah, the defense really has held up, and they're getting better week by week. And I think, you know, before we get too much further along, this is going to be a really tough team to move the ball on. The offense, yeah, it's a work in progress. It's honest. The first game, didn't run the ball well at all. Miscues, not a lot of good communication. And then against Boise State, the first half last week, a little bit more of that. But we talked about, I thought by the third quarter, after halftime, they'd adjusted and found some things.
Yeah,
I think they shot themselves in the foot with some penalties and a fumble here and there. But I felt better about what we saw in the second half. But there's still, the offensive line is, when you insert a bunch of new guys, is the last area to finally come together because of the communication that's required.
Yeah.
When you look at where this Oregon team is right now, it's always better to learn about yourself in a win, but how soon do you think it gets down the line where if some of those miscues and some of those issues keep popping up where it becomes, this isn't the beginning of the season, this isn't trying to figure some things out, this isn't, you know, trying to get personnel even healthy, where it becomes bothersome or worrisome and you kind of have to start going, okay, there's some things we really need to nail down on?
Well, I think they're almost there to that point. Although there are a lot of teams in the nation already this first couple of weeks that either got upset or went down to the wire with teams. I mean, they're supposed to win by 27. Notre Dame goes down. Those types of games. So you're already at that point of the season. You don't want to wait till game 3, 4, or 5 and say, gosh, we still got issues, even though we're winning. Although Washington did that all the way last year, clear to the championship game. So, this is a week when Oregon's going to be favored, and they need to clean some things up, take care of business, and get a W, and then you get a little better, go to UCLA after a bye week, and hopefully you're all on the same page then, and things are really clicking. If you get through that UCLA game and you're still having issues, even though you're getting wins, you begin to wonder, okay, what's missing here? How long is it going to take them to get there? Because I totally believe they've recruited the talent. I think the talent is good enough, and I know the coaching is good enough that they will get there. How long will it take them to get there is the question. It's going to be another week or two before we know that.
Yeah, last week we saw explosive plays too, which is what a lot of the fan base was lamenting after the Idaho game, is not taking shots deep. You know, we went through that for a whole week of Idaho did everything they could to take away those deep shots, but I think one thing that is really standing out is, and you mentioned recruiting of the talent, the playmakers on the outside are exceptional. Think of some of the best groups that you've seen come through here. I mean, name for name, this group is deeper than any group we've seen at Oregon.
Yeah, maybe the deepest. When you take a tight end group, thrown by the wide receivers and how well the backs can receive out of the backfield. The only thing that's been missing, Dusty, is the time for Dylan Gabriel to find one of those guys. In the second half, they were able to do that a little more. He was protected. And when you can find those kind of plays, then the running game works a little more. They complement each other. But you're right.
Yeah.
I can't remember a group of wide receivers that went as deep as this group is. And I mean, Taz Johnson, wasn't a factor last week as a receiver.
Yeah.
He didn't need to be.
Was it 3 yards, I think?
He didn't need to be.
Yeah.
So your tight ends being, one of your leading receivers, and that's the kind of offense they're running, take what you give or what they're going to give you and take what you have time to get.
Yeah.
Leading up to the college football season, we went through some of the best rivalry trophies in all of college football, and some local bias may or may not have carried the platy to the final round. I want to get your take on a trophy that isn't really discussed all too often in the Platypus.
There's a reason. I don't know what to say. I never understood where that came from.
Yeah. Well, it's a duck and a beaver just smashed together.
Yeah, I know, but that's after a lot of beers, designing that. I mean, there's got to be something better. I mean, it's
we were reading up on that trophy. We did a bracket of all of the great rivalry trophies, and we gave some facts about each of them. The Platypus Trophy is actually not even finished. Because the sculptor didn't have enough time to finish the feat on it before the game started. And so they're like, no, we need it. And he's like, okay, here it is. So it's not even a completed trophy yet. I think I do like the idea of the Platypus Trophy. I think we should do something, have rocks from the mountain. Have it carved out of rocks from the Oregon Mountains or something. You know, maybe give us a little... something a little bit more, I don't know, with a little bit more edge, and maybe something that's completed.
Well, maybe you could, get a big Douglas fir tree and carve it out of a fir tree.
Okay.
There's you got beavers, chew on a tree.
Yeah.
I don't know if the ducks would do on a tree, but it's the state of Oregon. So, I look at that trophy and I think, oh. Must have been a bad night.
Yeah. I think the idea, the thought is good. We need that execution. And then it went missing for like 30 years, too.
I wonder why. To me, that trophy would have come out of the 0-0 tie in the Fog Bowl.
Okay.
Somebody said, oh, man, these guys are bad. Let's do something that fits that game.
Again, I need to make it my point. I've told Jorgie I was defend his honor on the 83 scoreless tie. He had a broken leg. Mm. We all need to
He was remember. Not, in fact, the quarterback.
He was not the quarterback for the 0-0 tie. He came on the podcast this week, and he was asked about that game, and we talked about it, and he was in true fashion. I had to ask him, though. He said I was in cowboy boots on the sidelines, and I said, 83 Jorgie didn't wear shorts everywhere, unless he was wearing shorts with the cowboy boots.
Which I hope. I hope that happened.
Yeah. So I just need to get that disclaimer out there, because I've made it my mission to say anytime that game's brought up, that's not on our guy.
That's not his fault.
That's not on our guy there.
No. He was signaling in plays from the sideline, and he got quite a lot of them wrong, obviously. So you could say he was part of that.
The elements got the best of both of those teams in that game.
That was a miserable game.
Were you here for that?
I wasn't. It was a miserable game.
That was 4 years before you started, and so maybe you're the one that has kind of changed things with that rivalry.
Yeah,
game.
I'll take credit for that.
All right,
that.
There we go.
I think Bill Musgrave really is the one that gets credit for that.
Now, that's interesting. We were talking about kind of where you started. You have seen, really, there's only a handful of bowl games that have happened in Oregon's football history that you haven't called. Because when you start, that Musgrave was the first one in, was it 20 years? And they finally got over the hump and got to a bowl game. How have you seen kind of that elevation in the program in the expectations of where they were then, where going to the Freedom Bowl and the Independence Bowl was a massive deal for the not just the program, but the entire university and the area?
We thought, I was telling Tyson earlier, you get to the Independence Bowl, and that was like the most fun, and wow, can it get better than this? And then you get to the Freedom Bowl, and wow, this is getting a little better. And I remember getting to the Rose Bowl and thinking, wow, we've arrived. It won't get any better than this. We've gotten to the Rose Bowl. Well, the next year, we don't make it to the Rose Bowl. We go to the Cotton Bowl, and it's like, well, this is disappointing. I mean, but we still, it was a big bowl game. But right after that is when, some of the donors got together, and Phil and a lot of others, Ed Mashofsky, and said, you know what, if we want to get serious about this, we need to step up to the plate and build up facilities that will attract some players for these coaches. So that's when it really took off. And then, of course, Bilotti got the Ducks to that Fiesta Bowl when they really deserved to be in the national championship game, and to see it, it seems like a long time at times, but then at times it seems like it just happened over the last few years.
Yeah,
it's just been, I mean, this used to be just Autzen Stadium, parking lot, practice fields across the street, and a grass field. locker rooms down below were too small to get all the teams in, so they shared the locker rooms. I mean, we've come a long, long way in a relatively short period of time.
In building all those facilities, I remember you had very angry alumni because that's where they used to park, is where HDC and the Cass and the Mo. That used to be like the former player tailgate lot and parking lot, and they got really upset that they didn't have anywhere to go after that.
I was upset. I used to park my motorhome down there pregame, and that's where we did the pregame show. And then they said, no, you can't do it anymore. But it's kind of a catch-22. Okay, you want the facilities so we get the athletes in here so you can have a national championship-caliber team, or do you want parking? It's up to you. You know,
well, parking is awful nice.
Awful nice.
Former players, they want their places to, have reminisce and have some cold sodies in the parking
lot. There are a lot of people at tailgate never come into the game. So that's how fun that is. I've never been tailgating.
You've never been? I guess.
No. Never get it. Never.
That'd make for one heck of a broadcast if you did.
Live from the tailgate.
I'll just call it off the TV.
Hey, maybe there's a fog bowl coming in at some point where your services won't be required and you can head down to the parking lot.
That'd be a fun experience sometime.
that would be. Jerry, we appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
I love doing it. See you again next week, 2 weeks, or whatever.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Oh, no. This is... No, Thanksgiving's in November. I'm seeing.
Yeah, see?
It all blends
together.
It's
Oregon State.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
there it is. Jerry Allen, voice of the Ducks.
Thanks, Jerry. All right, coming up next, folks, we're going to dive into some NBA because Dusty can't stop me here in hour number 3 on Danny and Dusty, Tenny the Fan.